Light and Darkness. I'm going to apologize. I didn't recognize that I wrote down the same song twice. And as I'm singing it up here, people are smiling at me, and I'm thinking, oh, they must enjoy my singing, but trying to make fun of me. Oh, I do like it, but I thought that if we did sing it twice, you guys wouldn't have had to look at the hymn books. Anyway, I'd like to welcome Jeff Taylor from Beansville. He's going to give us this morning's sermon. So, Jeff, please come up.
That's on. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Phone is off and microphone is on. I was going to say that was not you, that was the Spirit working, because that song really, really hits on what I want to talk about today. So there's good reason. I was delighted that it was sung twice. Well, I'd like to thank you for welcoming me here today. It's been quite some time since I've been to OMA. My wife sends her apologies that she could not come. She just started teaching a class in the fall for English as a second language students, and she had missed last week to go visit her parents and didn't feel like she could miss again. Plus the fact, perhaps you've heard, that the Tintern and Beamsville congregations have sponsored a second family to come to Canada, and they arrived on Thursday, a family from the Congo. They've been living in a refugee camp in Malawi. There's a single mother, her two children that are 6 and 4, two girls, and her two brothers that are in their early 20s. So they just arrived on Thursday, and they were going to be coming to church in Beamsville for the first time. So, as I said, my wife sends her apologies, but she felt like those things took priority. As I said, it's been some time since I've been to OMA, and can you believe this weather? It's finally summer, and it reminded me of a time here at OMA many years ago, many, many years ago, when I came for a wedding, and one person, I guess the mother of the bride or something, decided that a little air conditioner in one window would do the job, and this place was packed, and it was midsummer, and it was hot like today, and our baby was 3 months old, and at one point she was completely limp and not doing anything. We thought we'd killed her. It was so hot, but you'll be glad to know that she just celebrated her 30th birthday back in the spring, so she did survive. The reading today was taken from John in a passage in which Jesus talks a lot about the relationship that he had with his followers that were there and the followers to come, sometimes called the other Lord's Prayer. I'd like to start today, as we delve into that a little bit, with a question that may seem a little frivolous to you, but theologians who have a lot more time on their hands to do things like just sit and think about things have debated. And the question is, what was God doing before creation? Think about that, and hopefully during this time, the Spirit will take my inadequate words and spur you to think about the love that God has for you. Let's go to him in prayer. Father, it is beyond our greatest imagination how you could love us in our state, how you could send your son to die, as we've celebrated here this morning, to be raised back to life on our behalf, and how you send your Spirit to live in these broken vessels. But Father, please help us to learn to love you, to learn to love others in the way that you have demonstrated for us. Amen. What was God doing before creation? Well, one theologian replied, inventing hell for those cheeky enough to ask that question. But that question does have some pretty powerful ramifications for the nature of God if we think about why did he create? It's possible to think of God and understand him primarily as the creator. Some religions do just that. But Christianity is unique in that in our approach, God is not just a creator and not just a divine overseer. We have the blessing of a completely different path to God that is through his Son. Not only that, but he calls us brothers and sisters. Christianity is unique in that it gives us knowledge and intimacy and harmony with the divine through a person. In the reading, if you want to turn to John chapter 17, Jesus talks about this relationship that we have, this special and unique relationship. He says, "Protect them by the name you gave me so that they may be one as we are one." And he says, "I pray also for those who will believe in me, that all of them may be one." So unity is a core principle of what Jesus wants for us. We are different people, but we share an intimate unity with each other. I always think of Oma and your relationship to the camp, and the other churches in Southern Ontario always think about how you give of yourself to the camp. You are different congregations than we are. We have the opportunity to bring people from other countries. You have the opportunity to minister to children at the camp. But we are unified in what we are trying to do. He says, "Just as you are in me and I am in you." So we have a model. And in Jesus we have a mentor. He knows what it is to be in complete harmony with the Father. And he says, "May they also be in us." Does that mean that I can share in the divine? I can experience God. And he says, "Why should we be unified? So that the world may believe." So we have a mission. It was always his intent that there be many sons and daughters. In fact, all should be his sons and daughters. And then he goes on to say, "I have given them glory." That's a tougher one. What exactly is glory, and how do I have it? I would suggest that often when we think of glory, we think of light and power and majesty. But at its basis, glory is about the worthiness of God, his core traits. And Jesus says, "I want them to share that." We are now worthy because of the gift that Jesus is giving us. That they may be one as we are one. There's that word unity again, or that idea of unity again. And then the world will know. Love demonstrated. So I come back to the question that I asked earlier. What was God doing before creation? The answer is, he was loving. If you'd look down to verse 24... that I left for this part, "Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. That's an incredible revelation. Jesus' glory, his worthiness, comes from his Father's love for him. And even more spectacular, he wants us to be there to experience it. And here's an important concept. Those of you who are in the class kind of got this earlier today. The fact that God is three in one is imperative to the fact that he was loving from the start. The Father, the Son, and the Spirit have been in harmony for all eternity. And now they're inviting us to join them. We'll step aside from that for a minute and look at a couple of other ideas. There are other alternatives for God at his core to say what he is. A theologian named Karl Barth says that Hitler always referred to the Almighty. But God is not first and foremost the Almighty. Or we could never understand him because he would be too far above us. We could never understand ultimate power. And that kind of a God needs minions. Not the ones with the little one eye, but needs servants to serve him. If that's the kind of God we have, then we can't have a relationship with him. It's always him up there and us down here. If he's the ruler, then I have a little analogy for you. And I'm not saying this happened this morning, so just understand that. But just suppose that coming here, I was speeding. When you see the car that I was driving, you'll know that that was not a possibility. He's going to take his life in his hands when he drives home with me. And I got pulled over by a traffic cop. Yeah, I was speeding. Yes, I'm guilty. But what if he says to me, I'm going to give you a warning. I want you to slow down, but I'm not going to give you a ticket. If I break the rules and he lets me off, I can have appreciation or gratitude, but am I going to love him? Or if he chose no to hand me a ticket and I'm looking at $240, couldn't I even get angry about it when I deserved it? That's the kind of God that you have if God is simply a ruler. What if God was creator before all else? If his basic nature is creator, then he creates. That's what he has to do, right? Sounds good on the surface. But if he is a creator and there's no creation, I have a bit of a problem. Consider a woman that you say, she was born to be a mother. There are some women that's what you think when you see them. They just hold babies in such a way. They love children. But there was a time before she had children when that woman wanted to be a mother, but wasn't. As a small girl, she might have played with dollhouses and things and pretended, but it wasn't the same thing. So a God who is primarily a creator isn't God until he's created, in the same way that she's not a mother until she actually has that child, the one who survives leaving her in a hot church in the middle of summer. Okay, so let's come back around to what I said before. There's an alternate way of looking at God and what he was doing before creation. Let's view it in terms of a loving relationship. In other words, that God was loving for all time. And we come to God through Jesus because he's like us. And he can show us this path. God is no longer inapproachable and a ruler above us. He's no longer just the creator. He is like us. Or rather, we're like him. John chapter 14. beginning in verse 5. Thomas said to him, "Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way?" Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." So first and foremost, God is a loving Father. Again, in John chapter 17, verse 24, "I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world." First and foremost, he is a loving caregiver. So if God is a father to us, what does that say about him? Well, firstly, he gives life. He's the source of life. Children come from him. He's been the source of life for all eternity. Creation wasn't even the first time he gave life. He's been issuing forth life always within himself. 1 John verse 4, 7 and 8 says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." Love is not something God has or something God does. It is what God is made up of. And he demonstrated it. Verse 9 in 1 John. "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him." The Father, by his very nature, loved his Son, and he continuously sends that love. Notice in the passage that we read where Jesus is praying for us, we too are to love. And there's a model for this. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. "I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." That's not the sense head as in ruler. That's the sense that head as in source. The source is God. And from that, Christ is the source for man. And from that, the man is the source for his wife of that love. A fountain is a good analogy for this. If we think of a fountain, everything comes from God. In 1 Corinthians, Paul goes on to say, "For as the woman came from the man, so also man is born of woman. But everything comes from God." And another theologian named Manfred Brock said this, "I want you to understand that Christ is the source of man's being, the man is the source of woman's being, and God is the source for Christ's being." So we have this picture of a fountain continually bringing forth water, or this fountain of God continually bringing forth love. And the perfect plan that he had for how this worked is that that love should emanate from God, through Christ, to us. Unfortunately, as you know, it went wrong. Jeremiah 2 and 13 says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns, that cannot hold water." And so the spring of life we have rejected and instead tried on our own to dig our own wells. In fact, I would call this twisted love. Acts 2 and 22. "Fellow Israelites, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited to you by God by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. This man was handed over to you by God's deliberate plan and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. Why do we need salvation? We're disobedient. But even more than that, Reeves, who wrote the book from which I'm taking some of this stuff, and I think I agree, argues that since God is love and we are made in his image, we are fundamentally lovers. And we can't change that. That is who and what we are. But we've turned that love. Let me say it again. God is at his most fundamental love. The three persons of the Godhead have been engaged in loving for all eternity. And when he chose to create, God created us as loving beings so that we might share in that divine love. The image and glory of God is given to us. That's his love for us. And we share in that. In light of the fact that we are love at our core, what went wrong for Adam and Eve? And by extension for us? So much so that the creation is even suffering because of us. 2 Timothy 3:2 and 4. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without control, brutal, not lovers of the good. Well, you get the picture. It's not a good situation. Pride and theft of what rightfully belongs to God and putting something else in his place is our nature. Wasn't that Satan's original rebellion? He loved himself more than he loved God. And we were deceived into believing that becoming like God was something we could attain. We tried to grasp something that God is willing to freely give us. Augustine said, it's not so much that we behave wrongly, but that we have been drawn away to love wrongly. Genesis chapter 3. When the woman saw the fruit was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. It was the desire for wisdom and being like God that was at the heart of our sins. I don't like slasher movies. I think they're just blood and gore. But a good suspense movie, I really like that. And people who know how to make a good suspense movie really get you on edge. The ones with the chainsaws and the blood, they don't do much. But it's the guy walking down the street who seems normal, who befriends the heroine and turns out to be the bad guy. Those are the ones that really scare me. That's twisting of normal relationship. And that's exactly how we've behaved. We've twisted that love because we've taken it upon ourselves to love something other than God. It's taking God's most beautiful gift to us and making it the worst part of us. There's a story that I tried to look up, and I'll read the answer first that somebody wrote to the G.K. Chesterton Society in the U.S., This story has been repeated so often about Chesterton that we suspect it is true. Also, it seems it's never told about anyone else than Chesterton. What we have not found, however, is any documentary evidence for it. It may indeed be from the Times of London, and as the story is usually told, but no one has taken the trouble to go back through back issues and find copies of the actual letter. And the story goes that the Times had a contest, and they sent out inquiries to famous authors asking the question, what is wrong with the world today? And Chesterton's answer, as it is recorded, is simply, dear sir, I am yours, G.K. Chesterton. What's wrong with the world? It's putting our love for ourselves before our love for God because we somehow feel like we need to be like God. The sad part is, we are like God. We were like God all along. We've just twisted our love inward instead of outward. But the flip side of that is the joyous part, that we've been given a second chance, that Christ has demonstrated that loving of yourself, that giving of yourself is the loving way, because that's what God has always done. And more importantly, it's what he and you and I are made of. I'll give the last words to C.S. Lewis, because that's always a good thing to do. He tells a story in the Screwtape Letters. If you're familiar with those, it's from one demon to a junior demon who's learning the ropes, so to speak. And he says, nothing is more abhorrent than Christians embracing the self-giving love of Christ. God's intention was to have an army of little Christs inviting people back to his fold. And nothing, to Screwtape, could be worse than that. Nothing, to God, could be better than that. If you have been touched today and want to spend some time speaking with anyone, being prayed for, it's all about unity. It's all about harmony. It's all about the love that God has had available to us from the beginning of time, but that Christ has given us a second chance to have for ourselves.